It's 7:43. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. A local foundation has been working to restore a Black historic church in Harpers Ferry, Mount Zion Baptist Church. Their project is one of many nationwide aiming to preserve Black history.
We would like to have some kind of display honoring the Black community that lived here and especially the history of that church.
That story and more coming up on this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. West Virginia is facing a shortage of child care providers, but a program from the state, West Virginia University Extension, and several other partners is training the industry's workforce. In the latest entry of Now What, a series on parenting, reporter Chris Schultz spoke with Carrie Cart, the Assistant Director for WVU Extension's Family and Community Development Unit, about the apprenticeship for child development specialists and broader issues in the child care industry.
What is the standard that we're working towards when you're training these professionals?
The standard is to have, you know, educated, well-informed child care providers. They need to have good basic understanding of child development, of all the domains such as social emotional development, motor development, cognitive development, all of those. But then they also have to have the tools of how to, you know, manage children appropriately, as well as how to manage themselves. It's not like you're caring for your own child, you know, personally. It's a professional position. We're not babysitters. The standards that we're working towards are the West Virginia Core Knowledge and Competencies for Early Childhood. Those are set down by West Virginia's DHHR, but they also come down much higher. There's national standards set by the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and then there's even higher standards. But our program specifically is working towards the West Virginia Core Knowledge and Competencies.
Why is having a professional in the room with these children so important so early on?
One of the big things that we teach our child care providers is how to look for milestones. You know, every child should develop in a certain pattern. Not every child reaches every milestone at the same time, but they should develop. And there are certain time frames when these things should occur. When they don't occur in the right time frame, or if a child is not progressing, we call those red flags. And child care providers are trained to notice those red flags. So if they notice that, you know, a child is not pushing up and they, you know, they definitely have reached that limit of where they should be, they can alert the family. So it allows us to catch any kind of developmental delays very early. But the other half of that is to know what's appropriate to handle children, how they should be fed, how they should be put to sleep. What people do in their own home is their own business. They learn all of those safety things and how to appropriately handle a child so that they can develop appropriately.
Where do we stand with childcare and the level of professional availability for childcare in West Virginia?
In my opinion, we're in a crisis. We have child cares that are shutting down. The ones that are open have wait lists that are miles long. Recently in Charleston, we had two well-established restaurants shut down recently, very close together. Tons of press on that. I mean, you know, it was all over Facebook. I was scrolling it. It was on the news and the newspapers. But at about the same time, we had a child care center shut down that served 100 children. And there was one newspaper article that I saw on that. I think some of the people in the public think we're crying wolf, but we're really not. There are not enough child care providers in this state. And I'm in Charleston. You know, there are more providers here in Charleston than in a lot of other places. We have counties that don't have licensed child care providers. And people don't realize how impactful that is. People cannot be productive citizens, go to work, earn income, help our whole economy if you don't have somewhere safe and good to put your child.
What are the barriers to adequate care?
A lot of our child care providers, a lot of them are nonprofit. There are some that are for-profit, but it is so expensive to hire all the employees. And yet they can't pay them hardly very much because if they their sole income is the tuition that the families pay for that child. And it is so expensive already for families that families can't afford to pay any more. The other flip side of that is we look at our public education. That's all subsidized by through taxes, county levies, federal funding, state funding. All of that is backed. It's all supported. There is very, very little support going to early childhood. We need to have the same level of quality coming from that early childhood that we do our public education system. But yet our society is saying, well, you do it on your own. We're not going to fund it and support it. And it's impossible. It will never work.
The Apprenticeship for Child Development Specialists program, how is that addressing these issues that we've been discussing?
It is an apprentice program, just like plumbers, pipe fitters. So we provide classroom education. They do on-the-job training. Once they go through the apprenticeship program, they become journeymen all through the U.S. Department of Labor. West Virginia is the only state that has an apprenticeship program for child development specialists. DHHR has backed the apprenticeship program. They provide funding for it. Our goal is to try to educate these child care providers so that they can provide the best absolute quality of early childhood education that they can. The credits they earn, we have reciprocity with several colleges and universities across the state. They can turn it into 9 or 12 credit hours of college because we cover so many core concepts. They must be employed. Because it is an apprenticeship program, it is technically an employer-sponsored program. So just like plumbers or pipe fitters, you must get a job in first, and then they will train you as you go and do an apprenticeship program because they have to do the on-the-job training. And in order to do that for child care providers, that's back in their classroom.
That was Carrie Cart speaking with Chris Schultz about the state's child care system. To read a longer version of this interview, visit our website at wvpublic.org. You're listening to West Virginia Morning. It's 7:50. It's going to be mostly sunny this morning across the state. Later on today, increasing cloudiness with a chance of showers and thunderstorms late in the day, highs in the 70s. Partly cloudy tonight with a chance of a thunderstorm before midnight, lows in the 50s. Tomorrow, variable cloudiness with a good chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the mid-60s to the mid-70s. For Thursday, it's going to be mostly sunny and pleasant with highs in the mid-60s to the mid-70s. Throughout history, churches have served as spaces for community building among Black Americans. West Virginia is no exception. Black-led churches span the Mountain State, but Jack Walker reports that preserving Black churches and the history they contain is an ongoing process.
Good evening. Welcome, everybody. Wow, what a great crowd. We're so happy you're here tonight.
As residents of Bolivar and Harper's Ferry filed into a May community forum, their voices drowned out the rainfall outside, and at times, even the speakers themselves. The room was abuzz, with neighbors greeting one another and loading paper plates with cookies and pepperoni rolls. So many people came that late arrivals had to drag out extra chairs. The forum was an opportunity for residents to provide feedback on the restoration of First Zion Baptist Church, which was built by members of Harper's Ferry's Black community in 1894. For decades, First Zion hummed with sermon and song, but it shuttered in 1991, just shy of its 100th anniversary. Then the building slowly fell into disrepair until a local preservationist society purchased it in 2016.
We were able to buy First Zion Church, and we've been working slowly ever since then, trying to raise money and making improvements and protecting the church where we can ever since.
Lynn Pechaconis chairs the Harper's Ferry Bolivar Historic Town Foundation. She said the group wants to preserve a fixture of 20th century Black history, when Harper's Ferry was a meeting ground for civil rights leaders and home to the historically Black Storer College. This year, the group received a $100,000 grant from the National Trust for Historic Preservation to do just that. Now, the foundation hopes to transform the broken-down building into a community center or religious institution that pays homage to local Black history.
We would like to have some kind of display honoring the Black community that lived here and especially the history of that church.
It'll take a few years to finish the restoration of First Zion. But across the country, preservationists are taking similar steps to protect Black religious institutions. Kay Kennedy Whiters is a preservationist based in New York who founded an organization called Black and Historic Preservation. It provides professional support to Black preservationists in the United States and beyond. She said efforts to restore or preserve churches like First Zion are not uncommon.
It's important because it helps to, so that we were here and that we're still here, and just to connect us to, as I say, us, as like Black people, to our roots, across the country.
But the process can be tricky because of the politics of preservation as a field. To access grants or protective statuses, preservationists have to prove that a site has historical significance, and Black churches are rich with history. When Black parishioners were excluded or outright barred from white churches during slavery, segregation, and even today, Black churches offered community building, financial support, and political organizing. In West Virginia, Booker T. Washington attended services in Malden, and Martin Luther King Jr. addressed a Black congregation in Charleston. But Whiters said racial biases have led many institutions to overlook or even dismiss the importance of this history.
Oftentimes with the significant, what's considered to be significant history of the United States, that does not include the history of Black people, Black and brown people, LGBTQIA people.
Generally, buildings also must meet a threshold of structural integrity to be preserved in their original forms. But Whiters said this puts Black historical sites at a disadvantage because Black communities are historically under-resourced. In the 20th century, white-owned banks seldom offered loans for projects in Black neighborhoods, denying their communities robust building materials or the financial resources to thrive.
Continuing allowing the infrastructure and the integrity of the building to erode because we cannot gain access to capital, then yes. Now, if we're looking in 2015 or 2024, we're seeing, of course, we will have a building that does not have integrity.
To address this, Whiters and other preservationists have partnered with local governments and institutions to re-examine conservation criteria. Other workarounds include repurposing pieces of a historic site, like its bricks, doors, or foundation, while reconstructing portions of the building that don't meet current standards. These efforts help preserve the architectural history of Black churches, but equally important is preserving Black religious institutions themselves, according to Reverend Paul Dunn with First Baptist Church in Charleston. Dunn said dwindling church turnout from younger generations, plus years of population decline in West Virginia, bring challenges to the congregation. He says part of the solution is expanding the church's digital footprint.
So our services are broadcast on Foxcast, Facebook Live, and TikTok, as well as YouTube. And so we now, anybody can be, quote-unquote, a mega church just by hitting start on your computer or on your mobile device. And so we have navigated some of the trials of declining membership by having the FBC virtual community.
Dunn said hundreds of people across the country and a couple of parishioners abroad tune in for the weekly service. Keeping this network alive helps secure offerings for the church. While First Baptist has changed locations since its founding, Dunn said these virtual gifts help fund the current building's upkeep, ensuring its continued use in the years ahead.
Thank you.
And with prayers and sermons spilling into downtown Charleston, the First Baptist congregation certainly puts its home to good use.
Hallelujah. Thank you, Jesus.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Bolivar.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day at our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, and Liz McCormick. Emily Rice produced today's show. I'm Chuck Anzalevich. This has been West Virginia Morning.